Vern, is it really true? Is it really Masters Week?
Yes, sir!
Come on, Vern, don't mess with me here. You're absolutely certain that this week is the Masters.
Yes, sir!
You're telling me we get to enjoy Augusta National for the entire week?
Yes, sir!
Well, there you go! Vern Lundquist, from his mouth, it's officially here. It's Masters Week 2016. I can't believe it. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon. Really jam-packed podcast for you today. We get to talk to Hall of Famer, three-time Masters champion Gary Player a little bit later. But first, just some notes for you to get in touch with us. If you ever want to send in anything online, use the hashtag ClubhouseSB. You can follow us on Twitter at the Clubhouse Pod. Email us theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. You can send me a tweet directly at Shane Bacon. So many ways to get in touch with us. I mean, it's really crazy not to do it. And as I mentioned, we are jam-packed, so let's get right to it. First things first, three things I loved from the past week. And first, I mean, the Jim Herman win. 106th PGA Tour start of his career. Goes on to win. Beats an incredibly star-studded, packed leaderboard. Patrick Reed, Stenson, Bayo, Dustin Johnson. I mean, he had to outlast all these big names. Just the sixth time in his career he ever even finished in the top 10. I mean, I wrote some things on Twitter on Sunday about this. You know, we as golf fans, and really we as golf media people, tend to root a lot for, you know, the big names. And we root for the Jason Days and Jordan Spieths and Tigers and Rorys and Phil Mickelsons. You know, those are the historic type of players that do things that, you know, that excite us, that make us fired up for, you know, history and what this could mean and what this could mean moving forward. And every now and again, it's fun to see these kind of storylines come out because there's so many of these type of guys, the Jim Hermans, the Von Taylors, these kind of journeyman type of players that either get out of golf or almost give up golf or have to go find other jobs in golf, but still have that itch and that passion to potentially play at an elite level. And, you know, once out of 106 times, a guy might do it. So I just thought it was really cool to see. You could see he was so jittery and nervous throughout the whole back nine when he got in there. And then the chip in almost calmed him down a bit, I thought. But the putt went in on 18, and I was pretty fired up for him. A big win, obviously, and going to be in the Masters field, and it's going to be something pretty special for Jim Herman. So obviously, number one there. Number two of the things I love was the Lydia Ko win. I mean, and just how she did it. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter, she was born the same month of Tiger's first major win back in 1997. And now herself has 12 LPGA titles, two straight majors. In 2016 alone, get this, a tie for third, a second, a tie for 15th, a second, and a win and a win. She's won the last two LPGA events. She's a monster. She just is an absolute monster. I mean, it's crazy to watch what Lydia Ko's been doing, the way she did it, sticking that approach shot on 18. I mean, this is a superstar. This is the best golfer in the world. I mean, better than any male out there. Her ability to close, her clutchness, I mean, it's amazing. Again, I wish there was more fanfare for Lydia Ko at 18 years old because what she's doing is historic stuff. It's the fastest LPGA player ever to two majors. I mean, the stats go on and on for her. So a big, big time win. It was really impressive. If you didn't catch that, try to find a replay on Golf Channel because, I mean, you need to see the way she kind of got it done at the end. Got some help from some other players, but that birdie on 18 was incredibly clutch. And finally, of the things I loved, Cabrera Bayo's final round 65, jumping 15 spots at the Shell Houston Open to a fourth place finish. He's played three events in the United States this year. He's finished tied for 11th at Doral, third at the match play, and now fourth going into the Masters. He's 201 on Sunday, and today he's 125-1. Playing in his first Masters, obviously, you know, we know the history doesn't go that way for first-time players at the Masters, but still trending in the right direction and maybe not a bad play of the types of people that are long shots, you know, going into this week, especially at the Masters. And we move on to the winning tweet, and I'm really going to try not to do this. I know that we kind of, the little small golf Twitter blogger community can sometimes scratch each other's back. So I'm going to really try to find some funnier ones out there. But No Laying Up's fake master scripting of Patrick Reed. First of all, if you haven't seen it, we'll put it up on the site, but basically they took Patrick Reed's scripting, and if you've been online over the last 10 years, you know every equipment company out there puts somebody's scripting out. You know, Sergio and DJ and Jason Days, Adidas throws it out there. Under Armour's going to throw out Spieth. You get Nike with Rory and Tiger, if Tiger's going to play. And basically what No Laying Up did was they took the scripting for Patrick Reed and put a green jacket over his red shirt for Sunday. It got so much attention that first people thought it was real. They thought that was seriously his scripting. Second, in his post-round interview on Sunday with Sky Sports, they asked him about it and even put the picture up behind it. Now, I mean, of course, Patrick Reed gave a very political answer, but it was pretty funny to see the fact that people took this little moment seriously and threw it up there. It was a fun little Photoshop from the No Laying Up guys. So, well done, guys. That was your winning tweet. And I had to run through that weekend quickly because we have to move on to this week in front of us and to the Masters. You know, that's what we're here to talk about. That's what's exciting. You know, the first major of the year. The reason it's so exciting, in my opinion, is the drought between majors. I mean, you know, we get three in a row fairly quickly, and then you have to wait so long for the next one. So, I mean, we've got a lot of people trending in the right direction this year. We've got a lot of big names. We've got a lot of questions. I mean, guys like, can Jordan Spieth win back-to-back majors? Or can he win back-to-back Masters? Can Jason Day win back-to-back majors? Day obviously winning this year twice in a row. Adam Scott's playing well. Bubba's already won. So a lot of things looking up as we get set to Masters Week. I wanted to, and I did this on Twitter, I asked people to send me in their top five Masters ever. I wanted to run through mine quickly. Of course, number one is 1986. I almost feel like that's a takeaway on the sheet. I mean, if it's not your favorite Masters ever, it's probably in your top three. Yeah, of course, Jack Nicklaus's final win and the way he did it and the yes, sir, and all that good stuff. It was, it's chilling to rewatch that because it's just so amazing and so unlikely. And if it happened in 2016, say Phil Mickelson did it, or say a healthy Tiger actually was playing and did something like that at the final round, it would break the internet for sure. I think it would at least. So 86 is one. 2004 for me, Phil's win. I was watching it in my aunt's lake house bedroom on about an 18-inch TV with my entire family. I was an enormous Phil Mickelson fan growing up as a left-hander. So to watch him finally get the win and make that putt is one that's always going to stick in my head. 1978, I mentioned Gary Player is going to be on the show. A final round 64 for Gary Player, 7 birdies over his last 10 holes. Another moment that would break the internet if it happened today. I love that Seve was playing with him, 21-year-old Seve, and was visibly clapping and cheering him on. That's how impressive the final round was. I mean, again, Gary Player shoots a 64 in the final round to win the Masters. I mean, it's incredible stuff. Number four for me is 2011. Schwartzel won it. I mean, you know, it's not for the person that won that Masters. I think it was just for the drama and the chaos and just the insanity of the last 2 hours. 8 players had at least a share of the lead at one point over that final round. You never really knew who was going to win. And what did it take to win that one? 4 birdies over the last 4 holes by Schwartzel. So, you know, it was just a fun, crazy day. Jason Day nearly won. Adam Scott nearly won. Tiger had a share of the lead at one point. 2011 is one of those rewatchable Masters that you would not get up and go get a drink for. And finally, 2005, the Tiger chip in. I mean, come on. You had to throw a Tiger win in there. And I mean, 97 was iconic in the way he did it and really the introduction to the world. Hey, this is me. This is what I'm going to do. But 05 was just so much fun. So as we touch on 2005, I figured let's knock out some mailbag questions. I got some really good ones this week. I mean, again, this is not surprising considering it's Masters Week, but I love getting questions about what's happening, and I love the passion when the questions come in, and it's always the most passionate around this week in particular. So if you have a question out there, if you have something you want to ask, as I mentioned, send it in. Use the hashtag ClubhouseSB. You can send it into our Twitter accounts at the Clubhouse Pod or at Shane Bacon. Even on Facebook, if you look up Shane Bacon Golf, you can write in a longer question there. Send me an email. So a lot of ways to do it. Dalton Johnson starts us off. What's your favorite thing about Masters Week? I think my favorite thing about Masters Week is that everything's traditional, and in a time and a day and age where tradition is almost dying, I love that there's one sporting event that we can really fall back on that it never disappoints. I mean, the azaleas are always beautiful. The course is always in impeccable condition. the par three is always fun. The fact that the par three winner always has to answer questions about, well, they've never won the big tournament, the practice rounds, the pairings, even the scripting for all the people out there that hate it. There's so many things that lead up to the week that are exciting. I mean, you know, that's why I started the Tumblr years ago about how many days till the Masters. I mean, literally a countdown to the first major of the year. I just think the anticipation of this event is so much that when you finally get to it, it's crazy that it doesn't underwhelm. And it never does. It never underwhelms. It's always exciting. So, you know, to me, that's what I think is really the best part of the week is the unpredictability of who wins, but the predictability of everything else. And I just think that's special. I mean, we all know the holes. We know 13. We know you can't go long on 15. You know, we know where the hole locations are on 16, how the ball's going to react. And I mean, that's casual golf fans. I mean, that's not even experts. That's people that watch this tournament and watch five other events a year. And they know spots at Augusta. They know holes. They know trees. It's just so special to me and so crazy. So good question there. Next question comes from Michael M. Cummings 003. Who are the couple guys you've got seen contending that haven't gotten as much attention as the big three and the like this season? I've got two. I've been saying this for months, so it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that follows me. But Louis Oosthuizen is one of my picks. One of my guys I think is really going to have a good week. Obviously finished in a second on a playoff to Bubba Watson there. Trending in the right direction. Has been playing some really solid golf this year. The missed cut in Houston doesn't really do much for me. I think his mind's probably already in Augusta. So I'm looking more at the rest of his season as a whole because he's been playing really incredible. And my other one is Patrick Reed. I mean, I mentioned him in the scripting and joking about it earlier, but played really well in Houston. This is a guy that still doesn't have a top 10 at a major championship, which is so surprising. I mean, he made the cut on all four last year, but I think he's still looking for that one breakout major. And I think the way he turns the ball over, I feel like the Masters is the one that it's going to be at. So I think the way he played over the final couple of rounds there in Houston is going to help him. As I mentioned, Oosthuizen missed cut doesn't bother me as much because I think the way he's played this year, he can just chalk it up to a bad week. But I think Reed playing so well on Sunday headed into Augusta is going to be big for his momentum. So those are the two guys I'm looking at. I mean, you know, you can look at long shots if you want. I mean, you could pull out somebody like Bayo at 125-1. But, you know, for me, I try to find those guys that are just outside the maybe the top 10 or 15 in odds and look at them. So those are my two. Johnson Timbers writes in, would you rather play one practice round at Augusta one time or compete in the par three every year but never play the full 18? I think I'd take the par three. I think the fact that you'd get to go every year and play in that event, I just think that'd be special. I mean, how many of us are ever going to get to play the big course? Let's be honest. So if you had a chance to play the par three every year, and I mean, you know, this isn't completely out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, U.S. amateur champs get to play it every year, things like that. I mean, I'm not saying for me, but for a random person, I mean, those people are invited back to that event every year. So, I mean, that would be cool to me because I think of all the non-major sporting events, I mean, I think this is such a cool secondary moment with all the legends out there, the kids and all that stuff. So I think I'd take the par three and just say, I'm never going to play Augusta, much like 99.9% of the rest of the world's not. And Clubhouse Lead writes in, whose career would you rather have, Jeff Knox or three-time major champion Padraig Harrington's? First, I would like to know the Google spike in Jeff Knox's name this week. How many people looked that guy up this week and how few looks he gets 51 weeks out of the year? We're going to have another podcast on Wednesday with a PGA Tour player, and we talked Jeff Knox for a good 5 minutes. So if you're into this guy, tune in. And if you want a little bit more backstory on him, tune in. But I mean, I'm going Patrick Harrington. The guy's won three majors. He's a legend. Been Ryder Cupper. Played the Masters a whole bunch of times. So I like the idea, but come on. We're not saying Patrick Harrington's career is something to laugh about. The guy's been incredible. Josh Sanford writes in, best shot ever at Augusta. Tiger on 16, Phil on 15, Bubba on 10. I mean, the Tiger shot on the 16th, I think in my day, I think in my generation, it's the best golf shot that's ever been hit in a major. Now, I'm not laughing or shying away or putting off stuff like what Jack did at 15 or even what Jack did at 16 and 86. But the chip in, I mean, just the drama behind it. Really, I mean, that almost encapsulated Tiger's career in that one shot. He's playing in a major, which he was obviously undefeated in until Wai Yang. He has this impossible golf shot. he somehow finds a way to not only pull it off, but pull it off in absolutely perfect fashion. And you get the added bonus of the hang on the lip for a good second and a half. And the awkward celebration, really. So it was all Tiger all the time. So for me, it's that shot. I mean, still watching it, it's amazing to this day. Different Strokes, Ryan says, does Day take Spieth's place as the face of golf with a win at Augusta? He should. I mean, he definitely should. He'd be back-to-back major winner. And obviously three wins already this year on the PGA Tour. I mean, we've talked about Jason Day before here, why it doesn't seem like he gets as much fanfare as some of the other people in golf. But if he wins at the Masters, absolutely he should take over. Already number one in the world, would then have two major championships and really would be the favorite moving forward. I think that PGA Championship win last year was so big for his confidence because he was able to not only play well, but play well next to Jordan Spieth. So I think so. I think if he wins, that's absolutely what has to happen. And finally, Ali Kerr said, ultimate playoff at the Masters, aim in corner or a quick nine at the par three course. I was asked for three changes to make at the Masters. I didn't want to pull that question up because I don't think there's a lot you could change. I do think that the playoff could change, and I do think you go to aim in corner. Ali, I'm 100% on this. Go to aim in corner. Play 11, 12, and 13 till somebody wins. Play it as sudden death. That's fine as well. But I think that aim and corner is your signature holes at the Masters. And I just think going and seeing three holes played, and they're all different. I mean, you get a par four that's really tough. You get a par three that's obviously one of the toughest golf shots at Augusta National, depending on the wind. And then you get a par five. So if you go par with one guy in a playoff, now you're at a par five where somebody could make an eagle and somebody could make a seven. So it's a fun question. I don't think they're going to go to a par three course for a playoff. That's just my guess here. But I would like to see them at least incorporate aim and corner into a playoff because they're just such beautiful, amazing golf holes. No knock to 18 or 10. I know I don't want to make them mad, but I would love to see them go over there to 11 through 13 for the Masters playoff. I think it would be a welcomed change if they did it. I think people would be a big fan of it. So thanks for those questions. As I mentioned, make sure you send them in. You know, always send them in. We're going to have a lot to talk about at the end of the week, come Sunday when the Masters ends. So if you have questions, I mean, at any time, just send them in and use the hashtag ClubhouseSB, and we'll make sure we get some of those up next week. I mentioned a podcast coming on Wednesday. That is Justin Thomas, PGA Tour winner, already playing in his first Masters. Had an amazing conversation with him about that. Really was one of my favorite golf conversations I've ever had. I mean, he was open. He was excited. He's fired up. He's ready. He told some great stories about some other pro athletes. So that will drop on Wednesday. So keep your eyes out for that one. But right now, we have a Hall of Famer, Gary Player, three-time Masters champion. Already mentioned what he did in 78. So Gary Player was kind enough to give us 30 minutes to chat with him about just really everything in golf. We talked Augusta. We talked Arnie. We talked Rory's fitness. We talked about what he's had to eat and how many crunches he's done and how guilty you're going to feel about not doing it because he's 80 years old and you're not. So excited for this one, and excited for you guys to hear. So here's Gary Player. Gary Player, 9-time major winner, now 80 years old. Crazy to think, Gary, 80 years old. Does that surprise you sometimes?
It does, Shane, to a certain degree when you think how time flies by. But, you know, my life is so busy. I'm working as hard as I ever did, traveling around the world. I went to Johannesburg, I went to Hong Kong, Vietnam, and then I went to Japan, and then Los Angeles for 2 days, and then here in Florida. But and I still go to the gym and work out. Yesterday I did 1,300 crunches and sit-ups. I pushed 300 pounds with my legs, and I put the treadmill on at max. So energy-wise, very little difference between now and when I was 25 because I've worked out and I really watch my diet. I would say the average person is about a 1, and I give myself about a 7. I'm not doing as well as I'd like to. I'd like to be a 9, but it's very difficult when you travel like I do.
Yeah, eating healthy and traveling is always a tough thing. I ask everybody that comes on the podcast what they've had to eat today. It's obviously early in the day, but what have you had to eat so far today?
Well, I'd like to start my day with all the juices. I think that's very important. You get a mixture of, you know, spinach, cabbage, broccoli, garlic, onions, and you put it all in a juicer, and you start your day with that. I think that's vital. I would say that's probably the most important thing to do. But my motto is very simply, you have all these different diets that come up. They're all trying to make money with diets and fads. They're the old slogan, and it's 1,000 years old. You eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. And if you have, virtually I try, when I'm on my farm, I try and have dinner, just a handful and 2 to 3 nights, no dinner. You don't put gas in your car when you park it in the garage at night.
you gotta fuel that thing up in the morning. Well, Mr. Play, I wanted to ask you, obviously Arnold Palmer has announced that he's not going to be a part of hitting the ceremonial tee shot this year at the Masters. And while we're obviously all going to miss seeing the King, how special has it been for you to be a part of the Big Three and the celebration there on the first tee at the Masters since 2012?
Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and I traveled the world extensively promoting golf, doing a lot of charity work. And we weren't paid a lot of money in those days, Shane, to do this. So we just loved the game. We loved competing against each other. That between us, we won over 50 major championships, regular and senior tour. And then we also won over 350 golf tournaments, plus minus. So we had a wonderful career, very different to today. We traveled together. We went to my ranch. We went down gold mines in South Africa. We went to the game reserves. I stayed at their homes. And we had a friendship that actually you'll never see in three golfers again and dominate to that extent. Now, you will have another Big Three come along, but it'll be a different world because today's big business. Most of them have got their own jets. They play and they're off and they're so busy. It's a very different life, and understandably so. So I will miss Arnold not hitting the tee shot, but everything shall pass in life. And one must teach yourself. I don't think that schools in the world are teaching people enough about the mind. I don't think they're teaching them how to eat properly, how to exercise properly, how to work hard for their respective countries. I think the standard of education is very poor, generally speaking. Singapore, extremely high. Sweden, a lot of countries have got high education. But we've got to teach young people how to prepare themselves for life when they leave university. Because you have degrees doesn't mean to say you're going to go out and do well. There are a lot of highly educated derelicts in the world today looking for jobs. So one's got to prepare themselves. And when you play and travel the world like we did, it's the greatest education that one can ever, ever, ever have. And Arnold was this great icon, this charismatic man, and he'll be on the first tee, however, which will be nice, and we'll give him a big hug, and we'll hit the ball in his honor.
And you mentioned education and people not really getting the true education that they deserve. Do you feel it's important as a young golfer, as a young professional, to go travel, to go play the European Tour if you're an American, or to go play events in Australia and Asia, just to get a feel for stuff outside kind of your comfort zone?
I definitely, exactly. But it's not only, if you're going to say that you're the best golfer in the world, people use the world so loosely. They talk about the World Series of Baseball. When I first came to America 57 years ago, I thought, well, there must be, you know, at least 30 countries playing. And yet you call it the World Series. Now, I mean, that's, to me, quite interesting. And now, if you're going to say you're the best golfer in the world, doesn't mean to say because you win in America that you're the best golfer in the world, or you win in Europe that you're the best golfer in the world. You go to get on and go and win in other countries is a very tough thing. That was my great desire as a young man starting out. I wanted to try and be the best golfer in the world and travel and win in all these countries. And without boasting, I won 165 tournaments. And it was very, very tough to get on a plane, fly into a country, cannot speak the language, cannot read the editorial, the food is different, the whole culture is different, and play on golf courses that were also different, and win. It's a great challenge, and that's something that I really enjoyed doing. And I think of the journey I've had, playing with all the presidents of America, God bless America, I keep saying. It's such a wonderful country and being such a great Samaritan. The world doesn't appreciate what America has done, however, which to me is very sad. Winston Churchill, the greatest man that lived in the last 100 years, said, why does he hate me? What have I done for him lately? You know, it's quite a good saying that. And so it's been an incredible experience for me. I'm 80 years of age. People ask me, what are my plans? I said, well, for the next 20 years, I'm not sure. I'm going to keep busy. That's one thing I'm going to do. I love my ranching. I love traveling. I love people. I love my work. So one has got to keep busy. You've got to keep busy. You've got to keep exercising. You've got to eat less. This one man said the secret to long living, longevity, the less you eat, the longer you live. And so I feel one of the most, it's imperative that schools start improving their education and parents start teaching their children. The youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. We've got to put our efforts into the youth in this great country of America. We've got to teach them to eat properly. We've got to teach them to exercise. We've got to teach them, high education and how to behave well and a work ethic. That's what made America this great country. There's no sense of entitled to anybody. I have 15 American grandchildren, and I tell them all the time, you're not entitled to a damn thing.
Speaking of America and your first visits, over here, your first master's was back in 1957. A ton has changed at a place that you speak of working. They're always working on Augusta National, and a ton has changed there. What are the two things that has stuck out in your mind the most that have changed from your first visits to Augusta National to the 2016 visit there?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the prize money. I won the Masters 3 times. I was within one shot, basically, in finishing second 3 times. I finished in the top 10 15 times. I played in the most number of Masters tournaments, 52. I had the most number of cuts in a row. So it's been a wonderful place for me. But my three, all that performance together doesn't even come, I don't think. I don't think the total prize money would even be $300,000. I don't even think it might not even be $200,000. First prize was $20,000 when I won, $20,000 the second time, and $40,000 the third time. Now it's $1.5 million or something. But money isn't the criteria. We practiced hard, went to the gym to try and be the best. You didn't worry about money. If I came to the last hole, I was a very poor boy, extremely poor when we started out. If I came to Augusta on the last hole and somebody said to me in the gallery, listen, I'm a gambler. Make a double bogey on the last hole and I'll give you $20 million. You wouldn't even think about it. To win the tournament was worth more than $20 million. To win that tournament or to win the British Open, when you work so hard all your life, money's not the criteria. You can understand that.
Absolutely. And something that's definitely changed there, the par 3 contest. Rory McIlroy told The Guardian that he's skipping it. He said it's a bit of a distraction. The year he nearly won it, he didn't play the par 3 contest. What were your thoughts on Rory, calling the par 3 contest a bit of a distraction?
Well, see, the one thing you've got to understand, Shane, there's no more freedom of speech. One of the greatest things that ever happened was freedom of speech. Today, there's only freedom of speech if it's politically correct. We don't. If somebody says something today that's out of line, basically his career is ruined. They lose their job. They're ruined for life. So I still stick to the word and say, you ask me about me, I love the pro-am. I love to meet the people. I love that cheering, the excitement, this marvelous, beautiful par 3. It's so beautiful. It's a honor to walk on that holy ground, in my opinion. But then another man says he doesn't want to play. Nicklaus never liked to play in the par 3. I don't know if Tiger Woods played in the par 3 when he was playing his best. I don't know. And I really don't care. For me, it provided this par 3, and I love it. So, but I have respect for his opinion.
Yeah, and speaking of Rory, I mean, a lot was made earlier in the season about his dedication to his fitness, and you were vocal in his defense. Why does it seem that so many people are scared of a golfing generation that enjoys the gym and that's obsessed with getting fit?
It's very interesting, Shane. People today give opinions on everything, and there's an old saying, this guy knows a hell of a lot about nothing. And it's quite interesting because I was the first golfer to start weight training in golf. And I was ridiculed, Shane. One famous golf architect, I won't mention his name, said I was squatting when I won the U.S. Open to be the first modern-day player to win the Grand Slam. The night before I won, I was squatting with 325 pounds. And this man said, Gary Player will never last. You cannot do weight training and play golf. You'll never win after the age of 35. Well, I won a tournament on the U.S. Tour at 63. And today, at 80, I still average 70. I beat my age by 10 shots a round. Sometimes I might shoot 66. Sometimes I might shoot 75. So exercising, strength is speed. If you keep your suppleness, you stretch, you eat properly, which 1 out of 20,000 people do eat properly. I mean, I'm being kind when I say 1 out of 20,000. So, obesity. Look at obesity. It's killing more people than all the world wars put together. But be that as... And I'll give you another stat. There'll be 100 million Americans with diabetes in 50 years' time unless we find something better than insulin. And that is exercise and eating properly. And yet, I don't know, people don't worry. But anyway, I got off the track a little bit there. So now I was using all these weights and playing. I was ridiculed and teased. And in my time, the only exercise anybody did was putting an olive into a martini. And that was big-time exercise.
Getting your veggies.
Now, so there goes Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods exercised fiercely, won 14 major championships. 14 majors. I've exercised like a Trojan. Yesterday, I did 1,300 sit-ups without being repetitive, used the treadmill at max at 80 years of age. I did all my sit-ups. I did all my leg presses, 300 pounds, and I'm going strong like a Trojan. So people, because they see them doing weights, I mean, look how well Rory swings. It's got Rory and Jason Day have the two most beautiful golf swings on the tour today. They have as beautiful a golf swing as any human beings have ever lived. So how can they criticize Rory when he plays and swings so well? I mean, it's actually beyond my comprehension, the opinions. And these people that are talking about this, they've never been to the gym in their lives. How about that?
I get a bit confused as well because, you know, while you're seeing video of maybe Rory squatting or doing some deadlifts or cleans or something, you know, it's not like he's not working on flexibility and all that as well. I always found it so interesting that people made an uproar about a guy that wants to get in really good shape with a trainer watching and keeping an eye on him at all times.
I'll give you a good example. You see some of these football players who built like Tarzan. They big, strong, big biceps, big shoulders, strong core, and they play golf sometimes, and they hit the ball a mile.
Right.
And they swing, they play beautifully. They don't stand in and can't hit the ball. I mean, what is it that people see? I don't understand how they talk. As long as you keep your suppleness and you eat properly, and if you want to be a champion, a world champion, the things you got to do. You got to rest well. You cannot take all this medicine, Shane. Everybody takes medicine. They get a headache. Pop, in goes an aspirin or an Advil. I mean, I get a headache. I don't take any medicine. I only take medicine if it's an absolute emergency. I put zero medicine in my body, and I think over the years, unless it's an absolute... You look at an ad on TV, it tells you to take medicine, and they give you six or seven reasons you've got to be careful. Man, you've got to be crazy to take that stuff.
I agree.
From my point of view, anyway, that's just my opinion.
I totally agree with you. I wanted to ask you something about Augusta National in particular, because you know you're such an expert on the golf course. What in your opinion are the three toughest single shots during a round at Augusta National?
You come to number 12, which is the easiest hole in the golf course, And yet it's crippled a lot of people golf-wise. My goodness me, that hole, it's only a 9-iron. And I tell you what, the number of fives and sixes that have been made on that hole. And it's been when people get to the last day and they walk off that 12th hole with a par, they are quite relieved. And then you take number five. Number five is such a difficult hole because the green, the average man, to give you an idea how tough the greens are, if you took a man who's, say, a 7 or an 8 handicap, and I took him and I put the ball on the green at Augusta, where I want to put it, and put the flag where they put it in the tournament, he'd three-putt all 18 greens, unless he had a day where he held a couple of 10 and 15-footers. That gives you an idea. So there are some very, very tough holes here. They're all, Augusta, I've always said, is like a mousetrap with a piece of cheese waiting for you to nibble. And I'll give you an idea. One year, I was playing with Arnold Palmer. Think about this. I'm trying to think of the exact figure. I think playing the third hole, I was 9 shots back, with 7 or 9 shots back. And we stood on the 11th tee, we stood on the 12th tee, and I was 2 shots ahead.
All of a sudden it switched.
Yes, and when I won the last time, I was 7 shots behind Tom Watson and shot 64, came back in 30, and won 7 shots behind. So don't ever think because a man's got a 5-shot lead going into Augusta that he's going to win. But what's exciting for me this year, Rory McIlroy, if he wins, he joins the 5 of us to win the Grand Slam. Wonderful young man. He's got a great chance of winning. Be a great thing for golf. Golf needs a shot in the arm now because our rounds are going down in golf, not increasing. And the most important thing is weekend golf, not professional golf. And we've got to come up with ideas to increase rounds of golf. We've just built a 12-hole golf course in Missouri for the Bass Pro Shops. And it's a 12-hole golf course. And member and family, mother and father and child can go out and play, have breakfast, play 12 holes and be back home, or the father or the mother can do that. Because we live in a different world. When we were young, the mother looked after the home and looked after the children. Today, it's a different world. Parents are the parents have both got to work nowadays. And so the family life has deteriorated to a large degree. So if you're going to build golf for families, make it 12 holes. Why is it going to be 18 holes? It's too time-consuming. And we've got to let the amateurs use all the equipment they like. But for professional golf, we've got to cut the ball back 50 yards. The ball's going too far. It's making a mockery. There's Bubba Watson hitting a drive and a wedge to the par 5, 13, and a drive and a 9-iron over the green. It's a joke. But then you take Jason Day. He is playing so well. What a swing. What a golfer. He's been second at Augusta. He's ready to win. He's playing the best in the world at the moment. And then the wonderful young man, Jordan Spieth, best putter in the field. I think he's got to learn. Everybody's got a different temperament, but he's got the big thing. He's got to learn to keep it nice and cool and not get too uptight. But sometimes a person who gets uptight, it's an advantage. So you can't say a man's got to do this. But Jordan Spieth, this wonderful young man, well-mannered, terrific, very kind man, best putter in the world. Man, be careful of the best putter. It's usually the best putter that wins. If somebody said to me, would I like to hit every drive 350 yards down the middle or be the best putter, there's not even a consideration. Best putter is what wins golf tournaments.
Especially at Augusta National, obviously you mentioned the greens there. And I was going to actually ask about the ball. I mean, at the WGC event in Austin that Jason Day went on to win, you know, we were seeing guys hit 412, 418, 420-yard drives. Do you feel like there should be a ball for the pros and a ball for the amateurs?
Definitely, without a question. Not even a question, because what are we... Now, Shane, This is the most important question you asked today. My brother was the world's leading conservationist. He told me 40 years ago California would have droughts and would be more like a desert every day. Water, Shane, I want to your listeners to listen to this because we're not teaching this in the schools. Water, we're running out of water, Shane. We're running out of water in the world. By the year 25, the world will be short of 20% of water. It's being polluted. People are wasting it. You go, just look in your town where you live, Shane, it's raining, and the municipality got the water watering on.
Right.
If you look at California, you go, Shane, my brother said this. Listen to this. This is, so, to me, the most important thing we're talking about. My brother said to me, he came to America, this great country. He said, Gary, there must be almost 500,000 glasses of water a day thrown down the drain. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you go to a restaurant, and you sit down, whether you want water or not, wham, bam, there's a glass of water in front of you. You haven't even asked for it. They don't ask you if you want water. And then you happen to drink it, which a lot of people do. I don't like to drink water with a meal, but that's most Americans do. And they drink it, and then you turn your back, wham, and the guy's filled the glass again right behind your back. So now you don't drink that, you leave it. And think about it. Around America every day, 500,000 glasses of water. Well, not 500,000, it's 500 million.
I mean,
let's work it out.
There's a lot of restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants where people are getting half full waters thrown away. And so you're obviously probably not a huge fan of rumors that maybe the 13th at Augusta might be lengthened. I mean, is it more if the ball comes back to what it used to be, they're not going to have to stretch out, you know, these immaculate golf courses, right?
Very good question, but I just want to do my math again because it's embarrassing because I did well at math at school. If you take 500,000 glasses a day, there's 320 million people. So work it out. It's not 500,000. It's millions of glasses of water a day. Millions and millions and millions. But anyway, now I'm not a fan, quite honestly, of lengthening golf courses, because now we're using a lot of water. And one golf course can keep 60,000 people alive, the amount of water that's used on a golf course. Now, what is the point of spending around the world hundreds of millions of dollars around the world from Timbuktu to Augusta on lengthening golf courses? It's more water, more fertilization. Fertilization is poison for the ground. I'm a farmer. I know that. You take more machinery. Your costs go up. The members don't like it when the course is too long and the greens are too undulating. That's why a lot of members are resigning. They had a beautiful golf course, and in comes an architect, and they change all. And we designed 300 golf courses. But I don't want to go into a club and redesign a beautiful golf course and make the greens undulating and put bunkers in front of the green. A lady hits the ball over the bunker. She cannot stop it. They start to not enjoy golf, and they resign. And then they spend so much money, these golf courses, not in the case of Augusta, but they have to levy the members, and they don't like it. Golf takes too long. It's too slow. It's too difficult. So they don't play golf anymore. So we are going the wrong way. All you've got to do is slow the ball down. That costs nothing for pros. You don't have to go lengthening golf courses. It's unnecessary. It's a wastage of money. But don't we live in a world of wastage? You go to a restaurant, they serve you too much food. If you look at the food that goes down the drain in America every day, it could feed a nation.
Easily. Absolutely. And then, you know, we've seen this in other sports. I mean, if you think about baseball, I mean, the pros use a wooden bat. I mean, we've seen it in other places where this isn't a crazy idea to have pros use something because they're so good, they swing so hard, and they hit it so solid that it's only going to go further. It's not going to go much shorter.
You've got to understand that we live in a very different world in sports now. 15 years ago, I said athletes, I thought 80% of athletes were on performance-enhancing drugs, taking something. And I was ridiculed by the press. Well, we've certainly found out. Maybe I was underestimating. If you look every day, some athletes around the world, in the Olympics, cycling, I mean, if you look at those cyclists, my goodness me, and you look at weight traders, and you look at this, and you look at that. I mean, all sports. I mean, every sport has been having this problem. And I think golf is the cleanest of them all, I think, by quite a way. But it's frightening. The rewards are so great. The rewards are so great that these people are doing this now. And I don't know where we're going. I don't know. One person said, let them take what they like. Let them take what they like, and as long as it's a level playing field. Now it's not a level playing field. If you don't take something and somebody else does it, he's probably going to beat you.
Yeah, you're chasing him the whole time. I was reading a book. You said the best shot you ever hit in your career was a 2-iron at the 1962 PGA in the third round. Is that still the shot that kind of pops up in your mind?
No, I don't think that anymore. I think the putt at Augusta, 22 feet. Looked at the scoreboard and I saw Tom Watson, Hubert Green, and Rod Funthis. I can't remember who it was. Not Rod Funthis, it was somebody else. And I said, if I hold this. And when I arrived there, my African-American caddy said to me, he said, Gary, I need a house, man. I need a house, my brother. I'm struggling. I've got children. I said, Eddie, my buddy, we're going to get you a house. And I stood on that 18th hole, the 72nd hole, and I looked at the scoreboard and I said, Eddie, we've got to make this to win. And nobody'd ever hold a putt from above the hole to win Augusta until then. It went right in the middle. And so that's the single greatest shot. And then I played a shot at Carnoustie in Scotland. I was playing with Nicholas. We were going head to head. There were five of us within one shot playing the 14th hole called the Spectacles. And the wind was blowing and I hit a 3-wood 8 inches from the hole, which enabled me to go on and win. And then in Michigan, I hit a shot over the trees. There were six of us within one shot or two shots. And I hit a 9-iron over the trees out of the wet rough. And the flag was right by the water over the willow trees. And I hit it 3 foot from the hole, which enabled me to go on and win. So I've had a lot of shots like that in my career. And it's funny how people say, they always talk about these lucky shots that players play. They keep doing it. And luck is the residue of design. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
And you hope that works. I mean, you've saw it with Tiger Woods over the years. He would hit some wayward shots at times to get the bounces that you needed, you know, to go on and win majors. But yes. I wanted to ask you a couple of kind of rapid-fire questions.
I've got somebody else for my next interview trying to get through.
Okay. I will get you out. I will get you out on this. If you never touched a golf club, what would you be doing right now?
Well, I'd love to be a farmer, but I wouldn't have enough money to do that unless I played golf. Thank goodness I did, and I'm a farmer, which is, I don't know what I like better, farming or golf. I put a tie. If I didn't have the money, I'd love to have been a school teacher because we have 22 grandchildren and 6 children. I love working with young people. I'd love to have been a school teacher.
Well, perfect. Well, Mr. Play, I really appreciate you taking some time. Good luck on the first tee. I hope you stripe it right down the middle of the fairway.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, that'll do it. Gary Player, that was great. Again, thanks to Mr. Player. That was so cool of him to do this. A really fun week. I mentioned we're going to have a Wednesday podcast with Justin Thomas. If you want to get in touch with us, hashtag ClubhouseSB. Follow us on Twitter at the Clubhouse Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Shane Bacon. Exciting week. It's going to be fun. I mean, the Masters is fun, and I hope you're just as excited as I am. Any ideas for the show, you can email them in. Any things you loved, you hated. If you do love it, make sure you subscribe to it and write a review. It helps a lot if you write a review about the podcast. So I hope you enjoyed this. Hope you enjoyed Mr. Player, and we will be back on Wednesday.